everybody, to the Tom and Curly Show on this hot, hot, hot day. If you're hearing my voice first, that means that John Curly is out today. I have no idea why. I don't know if it's weather-related or not. But guess who's coming to dinner in his place? No surprise, I suspect. Cue her music. There you go. That's Sherry Ellicker's never-to-be-appreciated-enough intro music, right, Sherry?
You know, we could swap that out for the days I'm filling in for John if you wanted to pick something else.
There you go. I think that's a good idea. So next time, and God knows it feels like you're filling in all the time, we'll get a good chance coming up. We'll find something different. I don't know that it's inappropriate. I just know that you're not a huge fan of that.
What?
So, you know, this is funny. You are ensconced there. I don't know if you're in a D.C. or Virginia or Maryland. I always forget. But we are hotter than blazes here for Seattle. 85 degrees right now, maybe up to 89. It's 91 in Carnation. What's it like on the lovely East Coast?
It is really hot, Tom. It's probably about the heat index is probably about 100 today. So I'm in Northern Virginia, about 9 miles outside of Washington, D.C. And so that the whole region is really under a heat wave right now. It's really hot. Usually we don't get this hot until August, but it's bad today.
See, I think it's important that we establish that we've got it relatively easy by a handful of degrees over where you are. And we'll have to check in. You know, there's big news. The biggest news of the day, perhaps, might be the Supreme Court came down with a huge ruling. And, you know, whenever we have a Supreme Court ruling, we always go to our Supreme Court insider. Cue his music.
You throw this ball through the hoop. A basketball.
That's right. Supreme Court insider Danny O'Neill, again from the hot streets of Manhattan. Where are you, Danny?
Well, we're a little couple blocks off of Central Park here, like right about Columbus Circle. It is steamy here today, but I would say not terrible. It hasn't gotten truly miserable yet.
All right. Well, so we're all enjoying our summer weather, some more than others. Listen, Danny, it's always a treat when you join our show, wherever you're calling from. And we've got to talk. I'm fascinated by the Supreme Court ruling. I was kidding you about being a Supreme Court insider, but today's ruling deals with that big, bad behemoth, the NCAA, and they've had their wings clipped a bit. And I want you to explain it all to generalists, people that aren't necessarily sports fans. But what is the significance of today's ruling?
The significance of this ruling is not about this specific case, but about the language that the justices used, and specifically Brett Kavanaugh, in announcing their decision about it. The case that they were considering is one that involved a cap on educational benefits. And basically, for the NCAA limited the academic resources that it could provide to student athletes. You were limited in whether it's tutoring time, the computer access. Like there were limits on it, and the idea behind it is that they didn't want it to become an arms race where schools could recruit against each other based on the idea that we will give you infinite academic assistance.
Yeah,
there certainly is assistance that's provided. What the NCAA had said was that there was a cap on that, and the Supreme Court reaffirmed a lower court's decision saying, no, you cannot cap educational benefits that are offered to student athletes.
Okay, because we all know whenever there's an athletic contest, we all chant, our guys are smarter than your guys, and we don't want that anymore.
Yeah, that's certainly not that. And that's the actual ruling changes nothing, because I think most people will look at it and say, oh, well, you know what? That this opens the door for players to get paid. It may on a future case, but not this case. The significant part is that the court is saying, basically, and here's what I'll read Brett Kavanaugh's. The NCAA is not above the law. The NCAA couches its arguments for not paying student athletes in innocuous labels, but the labels cannot disguise the reality. The NCAA's business model would be flatly illegal in almost any other industry in America. This is a giant flare. This is fireworks being set off, saying anybody who would like to challenge the NCAA's provisions of amateurism, its prohibition against paying players, all of the rules about amateurism, go ahead and bring them to this Supreme Court, because we just knocked this down. with a unanimous verdict, and we'll knock anything else that you bring here. We'll take that right into the NCAA's kitchen, too. It's an announcement that now not only is there a legislative sort of attack or undermining of the NCAA's authority, but it's also going to be judicial. The top court in the land has declared that they think that the NCAA's business model would be illegal in almost any other industry.
Well, I'm not sure that comes as any surprise. A lot of us feel that way, but a lot of sports leagues, the professional level too, they have these kind of antitrust protections that they're allowed to be like the only shop in town, and they're given kind of, I don't know if the court is officially approve that or if it's legislatively established. But what I'm a little unclear on is this is seen as sort of like the first crack in the dam, like you're suggesting. But when I look at the ruling, it just everything that they're allowed to compensate for that they hadn't been able to compensate is education related. The NCAA has always argued that we are student athletes, that they are the people that we are working with and for. And so we can do anything we can to them because we're providing them an education. This allows them to provide a richer education, perhaps,
you're right,
and a little more money, but that's not the significant part. But it seems to me, as long as they stay with that, as you know, not monetary compensation, but educational compensation, that they could sort of hold the dam and not let the expectation from what I read now that, oh my God, the dam's going to be broken and the NCAA is going to have no control and it's going to be a battle of attrition among all these schools for the highest athletes who can pay them the most.
You're right about the specific case here. This doesn't involve the payment of athletes. Where you're wrong is the signal that this sends about what other decisions this court would reach if it faces those questions. Based on the language that Kavanaugh used, if they see a case that comes forward about a player saying, I deserve to be financially compensated, it should be, if there a case that comes in actually challenging the NCAA and their ability to declare, they rule on a provision of amateurism. And the idea that the athletes and the appeal of college athletics is contingent upon them being amateur athletes. And Kavanaugh specifically took aim at that and said nobody would say we need to cap nurses' salaries because that's the purity of medicine. Nobody says we need to hold down that lawyers need to do this for the love of the law to be able to. Like, it just doesn't work. And it is tied into the professional leagues and the antitrust exemptions and this. But think about it from this perspective. You're a graduating senior from high school and your dream is to be an NFL player. You're not allowed to enter the NFL until 3 years after your high school graduation date. You've got 3 seasons that you have to spend away. What are your alternatives to going to college and accepting a scholarship? Which, look, I'm not going to say that that's worthless. It's certainly very, very valuable. But not everybody wants that. Not everybody's seeking that. And if you're a football player, you might be feeling, I'd rather get paid. If you're a baseball player, you can get drafted by a pro team coming out of high school, and you can go and start playing minor league baseball. That option does not exist for football players. They have to spend 3 years in college before they can do it, and they don't have any option. They can't take jobs. Like, they can't work a part-time job. You're not allowed to do that. So there is a little bit. This is – the NCAA is a cartel. And they function like a cartel, and they deserve to get broken up. And I am overjoyed that this was a unanimous thing because for years, I think it's good. For years, the NCAA has just sat there. We'll get to it. We're trying to fix it. What they are doing is basically you're going to pry this out of our cold, dead hands. Fine. Hopefully the stake through the heart comes soon.
So, Danny, I have a question for you. In this article that we have here from the Wall Street Journal, and forgive me because I am not a sports enthusiast, so I'm going from a place of ignorance here, but are there laws that are allowing athletes to earn money? Is that going to change on July 1st, that there are certain states that will allow them to actually earn money based on their likeness and their image? And that play into this? Will this be something that will make up for or at least stave off the idea of the lawsuits right now, because they can at least make a little extra money or a lot of extra money if they're really a great athlete from these new laws?
The first part of the question, yes, this is changing. Athletes will be able to make money off of their name, image, and likeness. The reason is because several states had passed laws that declared it illegal for the NCAA to restrict an athlete from marketing themselves. And the NBA, the NCAA at that point said, okay, we give. We'll go along. We'll find the how it's going to affect it, I don't know. But that is the NCAA hopes that by allowing that, they're able to preserve the rest of their indentured servitude system. They're hoping
right.
that is enough. I don't know what all of the trickle-down consequences are going to be. At the core of it is still that college athletes in major college football, men's basketball, are generating huge amounts of money that sustain entire athletic departments that include the salary of $5 million a year for the guy who runs the NCAA, who essentially is the governing body of all of this amateurism. They're certainly not receiving fair market reward for their labor.
Okay, so there are a million different directions we can go on this. Just on that, since you brought up the money issue, my guess is that the reason this has come to a head is because it's such an obscene amount of money that people are really feeling like it's unfair. If this was making about as much money as swimming athletics do, or gymnastics, or, you know, in other words, if college football and college basketball wasn't so financially remunerative, don't you think this wouldn't even be an issue? People could sort of go along, yeah, well, listen, they're students, they're amateurs, nobody really cares that much. It's because there's money involved that we have this fight, no?
Yes, money and television contracts. It supports an entire corner of the economy, and it's not a small corner. I mean, to say it's a multi-billion dollar business is not an exaggeration at all. Mm-hmm. It is huge money, and it's not that the athletes are not compensated at all, but they're not compensated with a salary, and they don't really have much choice about that. So, reform is coming. It's a matter of how fast, and if the NCAA, because right now the NCAA is pleading to be left with a seat at the table for this, and don't kick us out entirely. The Supreme Court decision today is a step toward a boot in the hind parts to the NCAA, saying if there's more cases that come like this, the NCAA is going to get routed there too.
Okay, I'm all for. I share your enthusiasm for today's ruling and what it maybe portends for the future. Except there's one nagging little part of me that isn't concerned about equity and fairness. It's the sports fan in me. Do you think? I mean, after all, I think. And I can't remember now where you stand on this. I've had many arguments with many of you 710 ESPNers. I think college football is the greatest sport in the land, better than pro football, and I love college basketball for the same reasons. And I think the competitiveness of those college supported or university supported sports are the greatest. And it makes me nervous as a fan to start tampering with something that's worked so well over the last 70-100 years.
I'm sympathetic to that idea, and I will admit that there is the possibility that this could change and dilute the product and make it worse. That's possible. I just don't see any ethical argument to keep it as
yes.
it is.
I don't see
any way in which you can justify, even if you said, hey, this is going to keep college football the way it is, and if you change this, it's going to wreck things.
Yes.
Be like, I don't think you can justify this economy being built the way it is. The college football economy and college sports in general, it's a racket, man. That thing is a cartel. Tom, did you catch up on the news about Frank Clark? You remember him?
Yes. Now, what's the latest? He was with Kansas City last I heard.
Super Bowl
winner.
He's
what happened to him now?
Currently, it appears he's in a Los Angeles correctional, in a L.A. County jail.
He's been
arrested by the sheriff's department. He was arrested Sunday after police said that he was pulled over in his Lamborghini, and the officer who pulled him over noticed a duffel bag that was open and had an Uzi submachine gun.
Sometimes
a man has to drive some errands, and occasionally that man has to drive those errands while driving a Lambo SUV, and perhaps while driving those errands, he was a little careless about his submachine gun being spilling out of an open duffel bag that he had in said Lamborghini.
You know, when I got my Lamborghini, the first thing I did was put the Uzi in the trunk. I said, forget it. I am not going to put that in the front seat with the duffel bag. Everybody knows that.
We should explain very quickly, because I understand John Keats wanting to remind me that this is not a sports show. So Frank Clark was drafted. He was a controversial draft choice because there were accusations. I can't remember now if there was any kind of a guilty plea or conviction that he had...
assaulted
beat up a woman.
His girlfriend. Yeah.
Yes.
He was arrested. He was not charged.
Okay.
He was arrested and not charged, and that incident was in Ohio, and it took place in the months kind of after the end of his regular college football season and prior to the draft.
Okay. So anyway, it was controversial here. I remember John Schneider saying, listen, we feel comfortable that he never touched the woman. If he touched the woman, then we would not have drafted him. I don't think that, we're convinced that he didn't. And so he's had kind of a lot of eyeballs had been on him. We ended up losing him to Kansas City because we couldn't afford him, because he turned out to be a pretty darn good player. I'm not cheering this news by any means, but it is concerning. Is he still with Kansas City, I'm assuming?
He is. So we'll see exactly what happened. It was in Los Angeles, which is where he grew up. He went to high school and college in the Midwest, but was from Los Angeles.
Okay, so concern. Hey, by the way, as long as we're just going to wrap up this segment, as long as we have you handy, just a couple of quick questions. The greatest four-game series of baseball in Seattle since the Ken Griffey era over the weekend, knocking a four-game sweep over the front-running Tampa Bay Rays. Does that mean anything, or is this just one of those great blips of summer?
No. Come on. Your Mariners are 2 games above 500. We've been in the midst of a rebuild, Tom. Time to get pumped up and get excited. Get out to the park. Cheer on the hometown nine. No, it's significant. This team was expected to lose a lot of games. Nobody expected or projected them as a winning team. And they have suffered a huge amount of injuries.
Okay.
And they're 2 games above 500, and they just swept the league-leading Rays.
Yeah, unbelievable. And then finally, just because I may be the only person in Seattle that still follows the NBA, are you rooting for any of the four teams that are in the NBA Finals, semifinals?
Well, I think it's Phoenix, but I hate their owner. But I think it's Phoenix. I mean, okay. I really hate their owner, but I think it's Phoenix. The Clippers, the Bucks, the Hawks, who have Nate McMillan as the coach, so maybe there's a little Seattle tie there. Maybe that'll win out, but I don't like Trae Young as their best player, and the Suns.
Yeah. Okay, but now remember, the Clippers are owned by a Seattleite, too.
No, he should have bought a team and brought it to Seattle.
Yeah, okay. Danny, I could go all afternoon with you. I appreciate you taking time out of your hot, busy New York City afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Tom and Curly Show. Sans John.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot, Danny. Basketball. All right. Okay, that was great, Sherry. I think that may be the first time you had a chance to hear from Danny. He's a regular on our show, and he's great. I love that guy to death. Okay,
he knows his stuff.
He does indeed. You're listening to the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Dangney here, John Curley away. We assume he'll be back tomorrow. And Sherry Elliker filling in, as she often does, becoming quite the regular around these parts. Again, thanks for filling in, Sherry. And this is a topic that I am going to defer to you on all matters practical and philosophical. The topic we're about to talk about is, it's another version of, if you do talk radio enough, you end up realizing there are just certain topics you can't escape from. Sometimes, unfortunately, I mean, there's always politics. There's always the homeless crisis. But in this last 15 months, it's been the pandemic, and now we're in sort of the post-pandemic. Everyone's looking back and saying, how has the pandemic changed the way we see life? How has it changed society? How has it changed you? And there's a suggestion that we're looking at here from Vox that, you know what? Maybe it will finally break us of our kind of societal narcissism. That there's something about our over concern about how we look that might, for once and for all, been broken. And they call the article Free the Wrinkle, which I think is clever, but I'm personally suspicious. It feels to me like a great idea for an article speculating about something that I think ultimately isn't going to be true. Where do you stand on this issue? And by the way, I think women and John Curley are hit so much harder on this topic than men are. It's not even funny.
Well, absolutely. There's definitely a double standard, Tom. And we've really come a long way when it comes to things like body imaging, right? I mean, they've gotten much more flexible in terms of the way models look or the way mannequins look. It used to be the mannequin was always going to be one size, very petite, very thin. And now you have mannequins that are all different sizes. Where it's been a little more stubborn is in the world of wrinkles. You still don't see a lot of wrinkled faces in any really any ad campaign, when you think about it, even for things that are for aging women, you still don't see a lot of wrinkles. So it's something that the needle hasn't moved too much. And what they're saying in this article is that now that we've had this year where we've let a lot of things go, like we've let our hair go gray because we didn't want to go to the hairdresser. We haven't been able to get to the dermatologist to get our Botox, that just maybe we're embracing this a little bit more, and will that get to Madison Avenue? Will that get to the people that put together ads and do things like that? And the example that they give is they give an example of like an 8-year-old wanting to look at a 12-year-old, like admiring this 12-year-old and saying, I can't wait till I'm 12.
Right.
I sort of agree with you that I don't see a lot of women saying, oh man, if I could just get to 70, you know, I mean, I don't see that. I know women, men are vain too. Women are very vain. They have different pressures on them because of, you know, society, and the vanity is driven by a lot of that. But, it is optimistic to think that somehow we are going to break through that whole thing of women have to have this perfectly smooth skin and can't really show their age.
So they cite Katie Couric and Justine Bateman, who have gone to the trouble of actually posting pictures of themselves without makeup. Do you feel like this is, it's almost pitiful how revolutionary such a simple act seems, or do you give them a lot of credit for daring to flaunt society's expectations?
I hate it, I have to tell you.
Oh,
I really do.
Okay.
I think it is, when women do that and they're called courageous and brave and all, it's like, did you run into a burning building and save a cat? No, you took your makeup off, you know? I really have a problem with that. And Justine Bateman, where did she find the time? I mean, where have we heard anything about Justine Bateman
the claws
in so
are out.
Long? I know, but I find all of that stuff a little disingenuous, and it's usually from someone who might be on not that Katie Couric is on the downward end of things, but you know, it's usually for attention. I know Jamie Lee Curtis did it, and I think you and I talked about Kate Winslet doing it in
the mayor of Easttown,
and that was heralded as this really brave thing that she did. I think it's all kind of positive that we're not focusing so much on making women, you know, have to be held to such a high standard. But when movie stars do it, I think it's kind of dumb. I really do.
Okay. So now, and I don't want to get too personal on this, but I've always been fascinated by the fact, because I don't know, you know, how old I was, you know, maybe, you know, late teens, where I realized that all these older women, you know, everybody's older when you're a teenager, but all these older women had been coloring their hair. I didn't realize that until I became an adult myself. Because, oh my God, almost every woman I know in her 50s is coloring her hair. To me, that seems like such a societal burden. And yet, just to flip around, and yet I've talked to women who say, no, it's not. Like, they don't feel like it's being put upon. Like, men, the patriarchal system is forcing them to. No, we like to look, you know, good or beautiful or pretty or whatever, and we choose to do this to ourselves. So it's not societal pressures. It's that we like to look, you know, if you have blonde hair, blonder, not gray. If you have, you know, brunette hair, darker hair. Do you feel oppressed at all by society for feeling like the expectation is to color your hair?
Well, I do color my hair, and my mother, who's almost 90 years old, colors her hair. She's still blonde.
Wow.
And she has always, I mean, when I was growing up, my mom was a stay-at-home mom, and I can remember she'd be home cleaning and doing what she did, and about the time my dad would be coming in the door, she'd run into the bathroom and put all of her makeup on. And I would say,
God.
Why do you do that, Mom? And she said, because no man wants to come home to a woman that doesn't, that looks like she's been, you know, cleaning the house all day.
And so
she still, to this day, she's still, every time I see her, her makeup is perfect. She's got lipstick on. She's got her blonde hair. So I kind of grew up with that role modeling, for good or for bad. I'm not sure. But during the pandemic, I did let my hair grow out some because I was too afraid to go to the hairdresser. And I didn't like it at all. I mean, it was just lazy as far as I was concerned. So I don't think it's pressure. I think it's a matter of you wanting to look a certain way and wanting to have a certain hair color, and that's freedom because you don't have to do that.
See, the thing is, I think you do sometimes, not you specifically. I love to kid John about all of his Botox and all of his, the effort that he's put into his fine appearance. But I've told him this on the issue. I am sympathetic because he's a man and he's not in his 20s anymore who is competing for jobs, especially in, talk radio is perfect for some of us, but, you know, as an auctioneer, he has to exude the kind of energy of a young man, even if he isn't a young man. And so the more that he can do with his physical appearance to look young, I'm very sympathetic to, just like I feel like women are in the workplace, unless they're already established in whatever field they're in, they're going to be looked askance if they're older. I mean, I think there is ageism does exist, but also this just the appearance is unfair to them in society if you're overlooked for a job. And I think in any job we've ever had, I think there are instances where, that person is too old, even though that person could do it. It sort of doesn't fit our idea about what they should look like. And I do feel like that part is a professional necessity. How about you on that score?
Yeah, I agree with you. And we do live in a society that is a little bit afraid of getting old. We don't want to be reminded that we're going to get there someday. So I think that there are other societies, you know, like in Japan, the elderly are honored. I mean, that is given great respect. I don't think we have that in this country so much. We seem to be a little youth obsessed. So I agree with you that it can affect your job. It can affect a lot of things. And it would be great if we could all embrace this idea of just, you know, accepting, you know, let it all hang out, be who we are or whatever. But I think if you, like me, have spent, and I did spend time on television and things like that, so many years kind of doing that grind, I'm not going to get out of it. I'm going to be my mom at 90, you know, putting on the lipstick and dyeing my hair. And
that's okay by us. But thanks to the pandemic, you don't have to do it anymore. You just will through habit.
There you go.
All right. Okay. So much for that. Tracy, again, I'm hotter than blazes here in my house. I imagine out on the road is probably similar. Summertime music. I love this. You're listening to the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Tangney here, John Curly Way, Sherry Elliker filling in. You know, Sherry, Dave Ross, he's an institution. He's much cherished. He does, you know, hours on end every day at Cairo Radio, and he also does this commentary that plays nationally as well. And he often has witty takes on the news. He's very insightful about politics. He's very a clever wordsmith and all. But we don't focus on those kinds of things that he says. No, Jacob prefers the cute. This is a really cute Dave Ross commentary that says a lot about families.
I have this sweet deal with my two grown children. I'm not really sure how it got started, but when they go shopping at a certain large grocery store, to get the club discount, they enter a phone number. But they're into the privacy thing. They want the discount, you see, but they figure that their number is none of the store's business, so they don't enter their phone number, they enter mine. And so when I enter my number to get discount gas, I'm getting something like 50 cents off per gallon every time. This really takes some of the sting out of $3 gas. Anyway, one day I get a call, and it's one of those two children I helped raise. And she says, "Dad, you've been buying some crazy things." And I said, what do you mean? She says, did you buy hard lemonade? And I said, no, that was your mother. How do you know that? So she explained that when you give the store your number, you get to see a list of what you bought. But, of course, since she's using my number, she also gets to see what I bought. Now, I've never bothered to use this feature since I already know what I bought. So I guess what this demonstrates is that some people will do anything to save on gas. But I also found out that it might actually have a beneficial effect. I now find myself buying much healthier stuff because I have an audience. I'm being judged by somebody I helped raise. Imagine how much healthier we'd all be if we all had grocery buddies watching everything you buy and gently scolding you when you stray. Anyway, I want to take this opportunity to say, loud enough for the family to hear, that when your mom and I need a buzz, we just pound a six-pack of blueberry ginger kombucha. If we get the other stuff, we're going to get it at a different store.
Okay, so there you go. There's Dave basically endorsing the Big Brother state.
Right.
That we'd all, if only we thought that some, like Santa Claus, was looking over our shoulder, we'd be much better prepared. A couple of things I love about that. I also have two daughters and two grown daughters. The thing I think is the fact that it's a family outrage that someone is drinking hard lemonade, I think it's just the kind of scandal we always knew was buried deep in the Ross's closet. I thought that was a kind of cute. But also, this idea that, yeah, somehow your kids are, you know, keeping up with you. Now, we don't have that kind of arrangement. My daughters are in New York City. But the one thing that we do share is our, you know, our DVR. Mm-hmm. And so I'm the one who records all this kind of stuff. And it is funny, out of the blue, because you forget, sort of out of sight, out of mind, you forget that your daughters, you know, if they bother checking, which most of the time they don't, they see what you're watching. And they were quite concerned early on when I started this show. I ended up watching a heck of a lot more Fox News and right wing, you know, stuff just to kind of keep up with John. And they said,
sure.
Dad, what? I think Cairo's, you know, is ruining you. And I said, no. It's just I just need to keep up with what's on the air. So I do know that kids kind of keep track, and it's always kind of fun to see what, you know, you used to be the one nagging, you know, or wagging your finger at your kids, and now they're starting to, you know, turn about as fair play, I guess.
Yep, the tables have turned, my friend.
So anyway, that's I highly recommend Dave Ross's recommendations and his commentaries. Seattle's Morning News every morning is always worth a shot. But that is the fact that Dave's a family man provides him with a lot of insightful stuff. And I think that's just the latest example that most of us can share in. So, OK, thanks a lot, Dave. And again, I hear the traffic music. Tracy, continue with our traffic exploits.